Energy Stew with Peter Roth, Thursdays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And this show is, I'm so excited about it because our guest we've had on before, we had a wonderful show, everybody loved it. And I've asked him to come back with a new book that he's authored. He's a master of mindfulness, or at least a master of helping us be mindful, and I'm sure he's doing his best at it as well. Right, Donald Altman?
That's right, Peter. Hi, it's great to be back with you.
Oh, thank you. And your new book is called 1 Minute Mindfulness, and I'm so glad to have a copy in my possession. I've read it. I loved it.
Thank you.
It's so helpful. You know, the last interview we did, which was last fall, we talked about your previous book called The Mindfulness Code. And and we talked so much about being mindful, what mindfulness means, and how helpful it can be. And then you've taken it to the next level. You've actually helped walk us through being mindful.
Well, yeah, thanks. I mean, that's really the intention of this book, was to help people see how they could bring mindfulness into all the different areas of their life, and that it was right here in the next minute. And that's why I called it 1 Minute Mindfulness, is that in the next 60 seconds is filled with an incredible amount of potential for awakening and recognizing new possibility and being present with others as well as awareness of yourself.
Well, yes, and presence is the key here, because this is a book that wakes you up to each minute and keeps you aware of each minute in ways that You walk through the day, you walk through the way we live, and you point out how we can pay attention to those minutes.
I'm glad you said that, because really our attention, I think that's our awareness, our attention, how we use it, is one of the most precious gifts that we have, and we have to protect it, and we have to use it in a way that benefits ourselves and others. And a lot of times we do sleepwalk through the day. And we're kind of on automatic pilot. And there's, you know, in some ways it might be easier doing that, but you really can miss out on a lot of things. And there's also this idea that if you don't have awareness about things, then you also don't have the choice to change things.
Right.
And so with this new awareness comes a greater depth of choice in how you want to lead your day.
Well, one,
and how you want to live your values, for example.
Sure,
yeah.
Sure. And your book is so full of great guides for all of that. And early in the book, you have a chapter called Reorganize Your Routines. And I like that, because what you were saying is probably true for so many of us, is that we standardize our lives. And everything is, you know, every day is another day that we quickly forget because we're not really awake. And you know, I'm a runner. I've run all my life. And and how many of my runs can I remember? Very, very few. The ones I remember the most are the ones that were very different.
That's an interesting point. In a workshop that I did, there was somebody who had a similar experience where they were a bike rider, and they would time their rides, and they were more concerned about the outcome and getting the exercise in, but none of the rides really stood out or anything like that. When this person started to refocus and experience the ride, you know, he said it was just amazing. He actually slowed down.
Yeah,
and
right.
And it became a much more satisfying experience for him, and he started to notice things. So I like to ask people, you know, in the next minute, wherever you are, you know, if you're walking down the street, and you've seen that street 100 times, what? Look for something new. There is something new that you haven't seen before, and it's just a matter of really noticing it.
Right.
Go ahead.
Recently, we had some heat in New York. It was one day this summer, it was 103, and that's the day my older son decided to go out for a run in the midst mm-hmm. of that high heat. And everyone was saying, why would you do that? And he wanted to be awake. It was a mindfulness experience.
He wanted to experience that.
Right.
And that's what I think we all really want, is we want the experience of living. And we really don't get it if we're in a reactive or reflexive conditioned programs that are running, or for, you know, which really means that we're not fully awake. And that's why I think a lot of people really are looking for something to help them really experience life. And it doesn't mean that it's all going to be, you know, a bowl of cherries with some ice cream, right? Life can be a challenge, but even that can be experienced, if we don't run from it, can be experienced in a new way. And I think that that's the way in which we deepen meaning in our lives, too. So that's important to recognize.
Right, right. And there's a lot in your book about gratitude. And I did a show last week on gratitude. And it's very important in the midst of our struggle to look at what we can be grateful for.
Absolutely. It was funny. I was working with someone yesterday, and I've been working with gratitude with this woman, helping her find that, and she said somebody cut her off. Normally she would get really upset about it in the past, but she said this time, she said somebody cut her off, and she realized she was grateful they didn't hit her car.
Good.
There's always something, right? There's always something to be grateful for.
You have one chapter called Pray for What You Already Have.
Right, and that way you'll never be disappointed.
Right.
And that has a lot to do with gratitude. I think gratitude is one of the really most powerful ways of realigning and readjusting our viewpoint on things, and coming to a place, maybe, you know, of acceptance, not just acceptance, but embracing whatever it is
right.
that's in our lives, and understanding that maybe it's there for a purpose, and what could that purpose be?
Now,
I think part of 1 minute mindfulness is about asking some questions in the next minute that could help you reflect on things and to enter that area of contemplativeness that is often missing if we're just running from one thing to another, and if life's a blur, we don't get a chance to do that.
Right. I want to ask you all about that, but I just coming back to where you were at with that chapter, Pray for What You Already Have, and at the end of the book, you talk about bestowing blessings and how present you can be and how enjoyable that can be to you know, put our stamp of appreciation on everything around, and we realize our presence with things. We're present with people who we care about, and we can bless, and we can bless objects, and we can bless our day, and so many things that it's a beautiful sense to have.
Thank you. You know, it's the idea of and throughout. The 1 minute mindfulness book, what I did were there every chapter has a practice. And they're all short chapters, like 2-3 pages.
And every one I've dog-eared because I said, oh, you know, because I always fold back the corner of pages that I want to go back to. And
oh, cool.
And your book now is about twice as thick because I have all these dog-eared pages in it. And it's amazing how, you know, it was, oh, yeah, this one too, and this one too, and this one too, and this one too. It's there's so much help in this book. On I want to go into these little areas that you mm-hmm. remind us about, that we can remind ourselves about. and how to make our lives happier and better just because we can readdress it from a new consciousness.
Yeah, and you know, you brought up the pray for what you already have, and that I wanted to just share with your audience. In some of these chapters, I'll have some little questions that actually help people start to refocus and use their attention in a little different way. And for that one, I have a couple, you know, different areas here. Like, what is missing? And then I ask questions. You know, if you're looking at what is missing in your life, for example, do I tend to focus on what I don't have? How is this affecting my relationships? What do I think is missing in my life? How do I feel when I place my awareness on what is missing? Or the reverse, the flip side of that, which is what is present and available. So what is present and available to me right now? How can I begin to redirect my awareness to the gifts that I already have? And how does looking at what is in my life make me feel? Does it give me hope and energy? How could this way of thinking affect my relationships? So I want to help people recognize some of the innate ways that maybe they've been thinking about things, and then to have them flip that coin in the next 60 seconds and think about it in a new way. And that actually is really how we change the brain, and that's the other fascinating area of this, if I could take just a moment
sure.
to talk about that, is how you use your attention, whether you just use it passively and you allow your folks to go to things that grab your attention, whether it's the doom and gloom news or, you know, something on the internet, or just sitting down and watching TV for several hours. Even passively, that will shape your brain. Or you can actively decide that you want to do something different. And how you, the amount of time that you use your brain to focus on something, that's kind of how you actually, brain scientists know, that's how you rewire your brain. So it doesn't matter whatever habits or you may have, if you want to change them and you focus and place awareness in that new direction, you are changing your brain circuits. And that's a very hopeful news, I think, for anyone.
Right, and it's a good feeling to feel like you're back in charge. You're making your choices.
You're making your choices, and that is really cool. Yeah, it's actually got a name. It's called self-directed neuroplasticity in the brain.
Well, your book is full of it.
What's that?
Your book is full of it.
Yeah, well, it's it's full of that. That's true.
right. It's amazing how helpful each. You know, I just reading this and without even thinking about it, I feel like I'm going to be more comfortable with how I go about my life.
Oh, thanks. And you know, what I tried to do in the book was to just have it be a conversation, like I'm sitting down with you, like we're just talking right now, and just having a conversation. And I wanted it to just have that very intimate tone, and I hope that came through for you.
Yes, and it's interesting because you talk about an experience with a monk who you, I guess it was a monastery that you were in, that where they were teaching you about presence and attitude, and how when they were with you, they were totally there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's wonderful when we can be fully present.
I think that is one of the wonderful gifts we have to give to each other. And 1 minute mindfulness is also about a shared minute, right? That shared moment. And how do we become fully present? You know, if you're with somebody and you have a whole dialogue going on in your head about what you want to say, how could you really listen to that other person? So we also have to learn how to quiet our mind, be receptive, and allow ourselves to open up to the spaciousness of another person in the next 60 seconds. And that's a beautiful thing, I think. And it's a very powerful thing, because how often in our culture, everybody, just look at reality TV, and it's all about everybody spouting off one thing or another, right? And rather than giving your opinion, what a gift it is just to be able to listen to somebody.
And you have a chapter called Listening Without Judgment.
Yeah.
And it's being able to be present and open. And you also have a chapter called The Grace of Patience. And I think that plays a big role in listening.
Yeah, I think a lot of patience and that ability to step back and be spacious, those are connected. And it really is it's creating a different atmosphere in that moment. And when you have patience in that way, you'll have time to come up with what you want to say and allow yourself to set aside your assumptions for a moment when you're talking to somebody, even somebody who, for example, you feel maybe has opinions that you just don't understand, or maybe that you judge in a certain way as, oh, that's ignorant or that's whatever. What would it be like just to set that aside for a moment and just to take a curious stance with somebody and to recognize it, well, here's a person with all these richness, a whole richness of life experience, and I could allow myself just to enter their world and to understand them better. So there's no agenda. I'm not trying to convince them, persuade them to my point of view, but just to understand.
An example of that is Justice Scalia. He's, because my son is in law school, so I talk to him a lot about, he's going into his third year, and I talk to him a lot about the Constitution and all that's being made of it now and all of this and what these different justices stand for. And it's interesting that Scalia, being on the right, represents points of view that a lot of us might not agree with if we're on the left, and yet he has a very close relationship with Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who's on the left, and they totally disagree on their opinions, but they have a very warm relationship, and I think if we can go about life that way, where we can look at people. I'm thinking of Clarence Thomas also, who very few people can agree with. And my son says he definitely is an extremist about the Constitution. And yet my brother years ago was at a... My brother and I have been involved with running for a long time and race organization and all that. And he was at the Marine Corps Marathon one year on the reviewing stand, and Clarence Thomas was there. And by the end of the time on the reviewing stand, he was getting hugs from Clarence Thomas, calling him brother. And yet they weren't agreeing on anything political. They weren't even talking about it. It was just about being in an environment together. And he was a man who really connected with people.
Well, that's being in communion, or being in an open communication connection with another, and that's very validating. And I think what happens is it can open up lines of dialogue, and where people don't have to be into the dialectic where I'm convincing you and you're convincing me, but a dialogue where it becomes more open and we can explore together.
But let's not have an expectation of finding agreement down the line.
And that may not happen. You're absolutely right.
Right. I have some family that are on a different political spectrum than I am. We all love each other, but we can't agree on our politics.
But we agree to disagree.
Right. That's true. We do.
Yeah. But, so there is agreement.
Right. Right. So, but, you have parts of your book are about relationships, and part of it's about living each day and your meals and how you're present in how you eat and what you choose to eat. And so, the book is such a good guide from when you wake up in the morning. You have a whole part in the book about what's waking up about and what, and how do you deal with it and what do you do next?
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I think that for a lot of people, the morning is, you know, they feel it as a very stress-inducing time, and they wake up and their mind is filled with everything that has to be done, and they often don't recognize all the good things they're doing for themselves in the morning, and all the little choices that they can make in the morning that could be nourishing. And it doesn't take a lot of more effort, a lot more effort to do that. And so I'm hopefully just helping people recognize what is there already for them and the potential that's there in the morning. What I try to do, and I think what you alluded to, is what I wanted my one-minute mindfulness to do was to really work with the way people live their lives. So I have one-minute mindfulness for home and play. There's one-minute mindfulness. These are different sections. There's the work and creativity section. There's the relationship and love, health and well-being. And then I added in nature, spirituality, one-minute mindfulness for nature, spirituality, and contemplation, because I think that that element of meaning and purpose has to be addressed in our life. And so together, I think all these five areas really can blend seamlessly into what we're already doing.
And they overlap also.
Yeah, and they all overlap.
Yeah.
Kind of like a prism when you look, or like a diamond when you look in and you see all the different facets. And each one reflects one of the others. So, yeah, there's absolutely, they do inter or overlap. And, you know, in the morning I have a thing about, I have one chapter in here called First Taste, Last Taste, where I ask people to really think about what their first taste of the day was. Is it something that they really paid attention to? And sometimes we think the first taste, so as people are even listening to this interview, I would ask you to reflect for a moment on what was your first taste of today. And then, well, you might have thought of a food, but what about the toothpaste that you brushed your teeth with? There was a taste there. And even before that, what about when you woke up and there's that morning mouth sensation? What was that?
Right.
There is the non-eating taste that is in the mouth during the day. So this is just about how do I get more in touch with this? And then was that first taste really something of food, let's say? How do you make it something that was really memorable for you? So you can say, oh, yeah, boy, that, I really took my time. I savored that cereal or that yogurt or whatever it was, and I could remember that taste today. And I actually recommend that people start a first taste, last taste journal. That's the little practice there I have for that. And even the last taste of the day, how does the last taste, is it conscious? Is it have some direction that says, oh, this is how I'm coming into harmony at the end of the day. This is my last food for the day and the last way I'm going to be nourishing myself today. Do you remember that last taste? So these are things that often we forget, but they're there for us. And I think when we pay attention to that, it enhances this next minute, because it's this next minute where you really live your life. You could think, oh, you know, you can't take a breath for yesterday or for tomorrow. And so this is where I think these practices can, I think, just increase our amount of joy, if you know,
sure.
In each moment.
Sure. There are a lot of times when I'm eating a food I really love, and I haven't been paying attention, and I kind of mm-hmm. look at myself and I go, wait a minute, stop this. I need to pay attention. I really like this food. Savor it.
That's a great observation. Yeah, especially if you like a food, wouldn't you want to pay attention?
Right, exactly.
And really savor it and make it last. Yeah.
You said it. So there are so many parts here that, for instance, surrounding yourself with objects that please you, and so that they can bring you into your present good state by looking at them. And so you talk about having pictures, you know, on your desk and things that will distract you into awareness, into awakeness.
Mm-hmm.
So it's finding pleasantness around you, noticing things.
Noticing things that are pleasant or beautiful, finding delight. And there's always something around. I would also invite your audience right in this moment, just look around at the colors in the environment, wherever you happen to be right now. Find a color, even if it's a room where you have been in frequently, find a color or something that is different. Even look at your own hand and arm and the skin. Notice how the color may not be uniform there. Notice the color on your, you know, beneath your fingernails, for example. But just really start to find something that, you know, find a color maybe also that you is your favorite color.
And also,
and so this is really all around us.
Right. Right.
And what happens, I think, when people get dissatisfied with things, they get habituated with things, and then there's that craving for, and I talk about the hungry ghost in this book, and the craving for more, and that if you really begin to, you know, again, have gratitude, like we talked about, and appreciate things, then that can go a long way toward quenching that desire for more and more and more, which leaves us kind of on a treadmill.
Yeah, and then another way we're on a treadmill in our lives is to be too serious. And you have a chapter about lightening your spirit, and you know that goes along with another chapter, the grace of patience that we talked about, and it's so important that to remind ourselves to lighten up. And of course avoiding judgment and letting it be. You have a chapter called Letting It Be, and we don't need to address everything, and we don't know about everything because our judgments don't have the answers necessarily anyway.
Right. I think it really is important to lighten up, and however you do that, and to share that with others. So. I'm always trying to find some funny little comic strip and clip them out and, you know, put them on my, in my office somewhere and, or share those with other people. And, you know, sometimes the internet jokes that go around can be very funny. I have a friend who is always sending, some really good internet jokes to his group of friends, and I'll pass those along. And, it's fun. It's good to laugh. Laughter is really is good medicine because it actually transforms your body's biology, the neurochemistry of your body. It helps you feel better.
Right.
There's a lot of research on that. So if you can laugh and find a good funny movie, always it's important.
Well, early in the book, you have a chapter called Walk with Dignity and Grace, and I think lightness is part of that. And living in grace is living without so much judgment and without such a heaviness about ourselves and about life, and somehow to let it go and to be present and just be in the moment. And so
that's the idea. There, you know, there are two ways to do anything, and so for walking, for example, you can walk to get where you're going. And I've done that a lot. And then, you know, you kind of miss the view because you're so focused on whether it's getting to the mailbox or getting the kids over to this game or whatever it is. Or there's walking to walk.
Right. To be, really to be in the presence. Right.
Yeah.
Now, I...
committing yourself 100% to that walk.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and let's just... universalize that, okay? Because we're actually running out of time, so I'm so happy about what your work is and what you're doing and how you're bringing this opportunity to people to be present and mindful and be in the walk of life and to be so helpful. So Donald Altman. I'm so glad that we could talk again. It's such a pleasure. You have so much to say.
Oh, same here, and I appreciate the work you're doing too, Peter.
Thank you. And 1 minute mindfulness. And people can just go online and go to what?
You can find it on Amazon or BarnesandNoble.com or 1minutemindfulnessbook.com.
Okay, that's wonderful, Donald. Thank you so much for being a guest on the show.
Oh, thank you, Peter. Be well.
You too. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at Progressive Radio Network. I can be reached at Peter at Heart River, HEART River.org. And thank you so much for listening.